From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
I believe that the entire FISA application, including the affidavit attached, taking out methods and sources, should be released to the American people so we have a full context of what was the basis for the application from an evidence standpoint.
That was Representative Michael McCaul, Republican from Texas who chairs the House Committee on Homeland Security, speaking Monday at a panel presentation at George Washington University's Center for Cyber and Homeland Security in Washington, D.C.
I believe Americans, whether Democrat or Republican, need have a right to see that.
McCaul provided more detail in his response to Frank Salufo, who's the director of the center at GW.
It's dominating the news, so I think we've got to zero in on your colleague on the House Permanent Select Committee of Intelligence recently released a memo, and I'd be curious what some of your thoughts are since it's gripping much of D.C. right now.
Well, first, in terms of background, I was a federal prosecutor. I worked on FISA applications with the FBI. It's probably the most serious power within the federal government to have national security wiretaps, FISA, to monitor American citizens in the United States or Americans deemed to be an agent of a foreign power. So I look at it from that context that these applications need to be based on evidence. My concern after reading the document, and granted it was coming from the Republican side, was that one of the principal pieces of evidence was a dossier memo that then FBI Director Comey came out later to say was salacious and unverifiable. In addition to that document was a Yahoo article, a press report, which in my judgment, I have deep respect for the press, but it's not evidence. I mean, this has to be based on evidence before you put a wiretap on someone in the United States to demonstrate probable cause they are an agent of a foreign power. So given what the FBI director said about the dossier, I find that difficult to believe that that is sufficient evidence to uphold the application. In my experience, there would be a duty to notify the FISA court when it was deemed by the FBI director that it was salacious and unverifiable. To my knowledge, I'm not sure that happened. I think it should have happened. I think the court may have viewed this application in a different light. But having said, there are two things I think that need to happen going forward. And granted, I think from the American Observer, you're seeing a Republican memo and you're going to see a Democrat memo come out. I think to really get to the bottom of this for the American people, two things need to happen. I believe that the entire FISA application, including the affidavit attached, taking out methods and sources, should be released to the American people so we have a full context of what was the basis for the application from an evidence standpoint. I believe Americans, whether Democrat or Republican, need have a right to see that. Secondly, and lastly, and I know we want to move on, is that I do believe the Inspector General is looking into a couple of these FBI agents' political motivation with respect to some of these politically charged investigations. When I was at the Justice Department in public integrity section, we prided ourselves on not being partisan. Nobody knew what your political affiliation was, and that was for a reason, because we were not supposed to bring our politics into that office because it undermines the integrity of the institution and the credibility. And that should not have happened in this case. The IG is looking at this particular investigation, but I would respectfully request and recommend that the IG also expand his investigation into this FISA warrant application to determine whether it was valid or not. And if it's not, then it should not go forward.
Salufo spoke with three other of McCaul's Republican colleagues on the House Committee on Homeland Security, Representatives John Katko from New York, Will Hurd from Texas, and Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin. This was Representative John Katko from New York, who, before being elected to the House of Representatives in 2015, served as an assistant U.S. attorney and chief of the Organized Crime Division at the U.S. Attorney's Syracuse office, where he prosecuted cases under the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, or RICO.
I was a federal organized crime prosecutor for 20 years, and in that capacity, I did well over 100 wiretap applications. When you do wiretap applications, it's incumbent upon you not only to show the probable cause you have to be able to tap a phone or tap a computer or what have you, but you also, it's also incumbent upon you to make sure that the information you have is fully and fairly and accurately portrayed. If you just put all the good information in a wiretap affidavit, but you don't discuss the things in there that may tend to be derogatory information about the sources you're using, then you're not providing an accurate picture to the judge. If you don't provide an accurate picture to the judge, then you're not following the standards of the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So in this case, the fact that certain things weren't disclosed in a FISA or a wiretap affidavit to the judge is troubling to me, because it doesn't present the judge with a full picture of what this person's about. You have an informant, basically, a source. And you don't tell them that, you tell them the things that are helpful to your case, but you don't tell them, well, he's being paid by the party who he's trying to go after and he has a personal vendetta against. That would be a very germane thing for a wiretap affidavit. If that's not in there, a judge may want to take that evidence. He could suppress it. If you suppress that evidence, all the fruit from that evidence is going to be suppressed as well. So that's the problem. That was a big glaring thing I saw when I read the memo the first time. But what we're saying about the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Department of Justice, I worked at DOJ for 20 years as a prosecutor. I traveled all over the world with them. And I routinely had task forces everywhere I went. Political corruption cases, organized crime cases, police corruption cases, you name it. And the FBI was always by my side, along with DEA and many others. And I can tell you, they're highly professional. And so when you have things like this, from an oversight capacity, it's incumbent upon us to get it out in the open, discuss it, and fix it, and use it as an example so it doesn't happen again.
After the release on Friday of the memo, Answer Coalition Chair Brian Becker and whistleblower John Kiriakou, who host Loud and Clear on Radio Sputnik, spoke with Dan Kovalik, a human rights and labor lawyer from Pittsburgh, and attorney Kevin Zeese from Baltimore, who's the co-coordinator of PopularResistance.org. This was co-host Brian Becker.
Let's start with some words from the former FBI director, James Comey.
Yeah, James Comey, who is now, at least among Democrats, somehow acknowledged as some sort of a senior statesman.
I thought he was the reason Hillary Clinton lost. Wait a second.
Right. That was only for a little while.
Oh, okay.
Now,
All right.
John Brennan and Mike Hayden are really the people that we ought to be aspiring to.
Our champions.
So James Comey just tweeted this, quote, "That's it? Question mark. Dishonest and misleading memo wrecked the House Intel Committee, destroyed trust with the intelligence community, damaged relationship with FISA court, and inexcusably exposed classified investigation of an American citizen. For what? DOJ and FBI must keep doing their jobs." Unquote.
Okay. Kevin Zeese, you want to react to FBI director, your leader, James Comey?
I have to ask also, for what is right? You're investigating Carter Page after he's left the Trump campaign for his ties to Russia, which have been long known since back to the, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So big deal. What's the issue? And I don't understand the Democrats' response about this, all fear of these exposing methods of surveillance and secrecy. We're talking about the Steele memo. That's not a big secret.
That's the method. There's one method. There's one source. That's called Christopher Steele.
In a Yahoo News article.
Also really secretly authored, even though Michael Isikoff is the author. It's really Christopher Steele.
Right. But so big deal. That's not a big secret method that the Democrats are fighting about. So, but on the other hand, now you have this whole Russiagate thing. Okay, should it continue? Should it have even started? I mean, the lack of proof on Russiagate, I think, is the first place to raise questions. But now we're getting into this obstruction of justice stuff, and Trump is implying he's going to fire Rod Rosenstein, which means that he's going to essentially file Mueller. Now we're getting into a whole different fight. It's not about Russiagate anymore. Now it's about Trump just abusing his power as president to stop an investigation.
Well, that's what Watergate was, except perhaps exactly. there were underlying crimes. None have been proved in the case of the Russiagate. I want to go back and again help the audience, because I think people are just lost in this, and people have sort of switched sides. The Democrats are now the liberals are the champions of the FBI, and asserting that Russia's carrying out this, you know, terrible takeover of America. But I want to go back to where this all started. Christopher Steele was hired by Fusion GPS on and he was hired back in April 2016. Originally, it was the Republican rivals of Donald Trump who set this process into motion. And here's a sort of a commentary about what was going on. In April 2016, Mark Elias, a partner in the large Seattle-based firm Perkins Coie and head of its political law practice, hired Fusion GPS to do opposition research on Trump. Elias was the attorney of record for the Democratic National Committee and the Clinton presidential campaign. Now, that's April 2016. I want people to remember this in terms of George Papadopoulos and when the FBI gets in on the act in July 2016. But this is April 2016. As part of their investigation, Fusion GPS hired Orbis Business Intelligence, a private British intelligence firm, to look into connections between Trump and Russia. Now, Christopher Steele said that they only told him one thing. Now, this is the DNC. This is research, opposition research. They had one question for him to research, and here it is. They gave me no specific marching orders, quote, beyond this basic question. Why did Mr. Trump repeatedly seek to do deals in a notoriously corrupt police state that most serious investors shun? That was it. That's how this started. That's how this started. And when you think about it, business people are doing business in Russia from all over the world.
Constantly.
And whether you call it names and you use caricatured language, the notorious police state, corrupt, something that serious investors shun. I don't know who they are. Is that ExxonMobil? I thought ExxonMobil, they're serious investors. They were doing business there. But what about Saudi Arabia? What about all the other countries in the world where serious investors are also doing business? But from the beginning, this story was incentivized based on an effort by Donald Trump's political opponents. And thus, one cannot, if you look at the genesis of the campaign, say something other than this is a political campaign. It was a political campaign in search of facts. And when facts weren't available, they came up with unvetted data. And John Kiriakou, you've talked about this a lot. The Steele dossier, these 16, 17 memoranda, none of that material is vetted.
No, none of it. Literally none of it is vetted. And in any normal situation, none of that information would have even made its way to the principals. What happens is the information goes to...
So you're talking about for FBI or CIA?
Correct. Correct. It would go to a team of analysts, and the analysts would vet the information. And if it can't be vetted, it's dropped. It's ignored. Because it likely can't be trusted. But that's not what happened here. What happened here was that every rumor, every innuendo was taken as fact. And that's what was put forward.
Yeah. So Dan Kovalik, I mean, Christopher Steele is incentivized because he's a hired hand. He's not trying to come up with an FBI report about a target. He's just coming up with information that will make his client happy. And his client will be happy if he comes up with dirt against Donald Trump. And by the way, when you really think about this, Christopher Steele was working in Russia, a foreign agent, yeah. Christopher Steele, working in Russia, collecting data against a political rival running for president of the United States, Donald Trump. Wouldn't that be kind of meddling? I mean, using Russia to meddle in American elections?
Well, of course. Of course. And of course, there's a lot of interesting things to say here. I mean, first of all, you know, when we talk about corrupt police states, the United States comes to mind. It seems like the pot calling the kettle black here. But putting that aside, you know, the specter of Nixon, you know, was raised here. And I think you're going to hear a lot of comparisons to Nixon, again, possibly in terms of Trump's decision to ultimately get Mueller investigation ended. But what really looks Nixonian to me here is, frankly, using the FBI as they were here to go after a political opponent. That's Nixonian. So it's the Obama administration and its FBI that is acting in ways that are inappropriate.
That's right.
And again, they do remind me of Nixon. And I think that that cannot be forgotten. And I think Democrats, whether they like Obama or not, have to be critical of that.
And again, and Kevin and John, too, if you want to jump in, I mean, we're talking about what the FISA the representations of the FISA court originally in October 2016, and then every 90 days it's renewed. But, you know, it was at that same time in October 2016 that the FBI actually reached an agreement with Steele to pay him to continue his work.
That's right.
I mean, he's hired by Republican rivals of Trump. Then Trump wins the nomination, so they stop paying him, or it looks like he's going to. The Fusion GPS and the Democratic National Committee, or the law firm working for them, representing him, they pick him up. And then in October of 2016, right before the election, James Comey, then director of FBI, asks says that he'll start to pay Christopher Steele, too, to be a part of the FBI, well, on the payroll. Is that normal, John?
No, that is not normal. The FBI normally does not pay for information. The CIA certainly does, but that's the nature of intelligence. The FBI is a law enforcement organization, and they don't pay for information because that is generally seen as sort of gumming up the works. This was unusual. This was not something that was in the normal course of FBI business. And Brian, I mentioned to you offline before we started this segment, I know Christopher Steele. I worked with Christopher Steele, and I don't recognize this Christopher Steele. This is not the guy that I knew 20 years ago.
Meaning what exactly?
He's such a far more respected and qualified law enforcement officer than this is making him look to be. It's as though he was either in over his head, or he had such a deep hatred of Donald Trump that he allowed that to get the better of him.
Yeah, well, that's a plausible motivation. I mean, you can look at Donald Trump and find a lot wrong with Donald Trump.
Sure.
Certainly, we have been foremost critics of Donald Trump.
Yes.
So that would be a plausible explanation for someone's motivation, in addition to the fact that he was getting paid lots of money to
six figures.
Now here we have Kevin, James Comey's led FBI was willing to pay Steele, but then they decided not to. And Steele, according to I'm going back to the Nunes memo here, Steele was suspended and then terminated as an FBI source for what the FBI defines as the most serious of violations, an unauthorized disclosure to the media of his relationship with the FBI in an October 30th, 2016 Mother Jones article by David Korn. Well, anyway, go ahead. Talk about that.
Wow. Boy, this whole Russiagate thing has so many different spins to it. And the desire of the intelligence community, the Pentagon, the FBI, to make sure they can control Donald Trump, I think really is a large part of what was going on with this whole Russiagate stuff. Beyond the Democrats trying not to admit they screwed up the election and had a terrible candidate, there's also this desire to make sure that this loose cannon president who is talking about America first and working with Russia, you know, that they have to control him. And so I'm not surprised they wanted to continue to work with Steele until he, you know, got in trouble for talking to the media. But because Steele could have been helpful in controlling Donald Trump if he became president. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of this whole Mueller investigation is about. And they've not found very much on Russiagate. You know, a little bit of RT reporting on the presidential race. Wow, that's really unusual for a media outlet to report on a presidential race. Some Facebook and tweet advertising, half of which was after the election was already over. I mean, there's not much there so far. And so they're really pushing this. And Trump is now going to start pushing back.
And also, as they keep doing it, I was just looking at the polls today. Trump and the Republicans' polls are going up because I think actually the American people, one, don't care about this. I mean, maybe a small part of the population does, but most people are like, do I have a job? Do I have decent wages? Can I get my kids to a doctor? I mean, basic things like that. Anyway, I want to go back and read again from the memo, and then Dan Kovalik and Kevin, throw it back to you. Before and after Steele was terminated by the FBI, as a source, he maintained contact with the Department of Justice via then Associate Deputy Attorney General Bruce Orr, a senior DOJ official who worked closely with Deputy Attorneys General Yates and later Rosenstein. Shortly after the election, the FBI began interviewing Orr, that's Deputy Attorney General Orr, documenting his communications with Steele. For example, in September 2016, Steele admitted to Orr his feelings against then-candidate Trump when Steele said, quote, he was desperate that Donald Trump not get elected and was passionate about him not being president, close quote. This clear evidence of Steele's bias was recorded by Orr at the time and subsequently in official FBI files, but not reflected in any of Page's FISA applications. In other words, they were maybe citing Steele's research, but not saying Steele was politically opposed to Trump. But here's the next point, and I want people to really listen to it. During the same time period, Orr, that's Deputy Attorney General Orr's wife, was employed by Fusion GPS to assist in the cultivation of opposition research on Trump. Orr later provided the FBI with all of his wife's opposition research paid for by the DNC and Clinton campaign via Fusion GPS. The Orr's relationship with Steele and Fusion GPS was inexplicably concealed from the court. Now, again, we don't know if this is true. This is the Nunes memo. Maybe there's some disingenuous way this is being worded.
But it sounds pretty damning the way it's written.
All of it sounds plausible.
Sure.
Let's put it that way.
Sure.
All of it sounds plausible. And I can remember back at the time of the Democratic National Convention, remember when WikiLeaks released all those embarrassing emails about how the Democratic National Committee was twisting and turning the primary process so that Hillary Clinton would definitely defeat Bernie Sanders. And all these documents came out showing that the DNC was breaking its own rules. And what was the response of the Democratic Party officials? Don't read those documents. Don't read those emails because they came from the Russians. Put your hands over your ears. Put your hands over your eyes. Don't read them. And of course, people did read them. It doesn't work to tell people don't read the stuff. And then Deborah Wasserman Schultz had to resign. Donna Brazile, who became interim chairperson, who was also telling people don't read the emails, then she had to step down because some of the emails showed that she was giving debate questions from CNN, where she was a commentator, in advance to Hillary Clinton. I mean, the idea that that there's political bias in Washington for one candidate over another, like, that's completely plausible. And the response, don't listen to these emails, don't read them because they come from the wrong source. I just think a large part of the American population is not going to buy that. Go ahead, Dan Kovalik.
Yeah, well, I agree. I agree that it's my sense that people are getting pretty weary of the whole Russiagate investigation to begin with. I think this is just going to add to people's desire to have this thing over with. But the other thing that just comes to mind, again, when I think about this memo and think about what's happened, where, again, I do think the FBI is being used somehow, and the FISA courts are being used for political gain, in this case, by the DNC, and before that, apparently by others in the Republican Party who didn't want Trump to win. You know, it just makes me very uneasy that this is happening. Again, we know that this has happened before, but one has to question, frankly, how democratic our system is when this is happening. And again, the irony of ironies is that, you know, the whole Russiagate narrative revolves around the claim that Russia somehow stole our democracy. I don't see a lot of democracy here to be stolen, to be honest.
That's so true.
Well, as I said earlier, it seems to me that this is whatever you call it, a representative democracy. We have an FBI-led state. I mean, the FBI is the dominant political power. The only thing that's happened here is there's a little, you know, sort of little glimmer where you get to see what the FBI does routinely. And as we talked about earlier, going to the FISA court, getting warrants against people, no corroboration really of the evidence, and then beginning mass or individualized surveillance against people that can ruin people's lives. People may not even know about it. I mean, that's the real thing. And again, going back, FISA was passed. Again, the FISA powers and the FBI and NSA and CIA's ability to use the FISA court, all the Congress people voted for that, again, giving them more and more power. And what do you expect? We know that this goes on day in and day out, that the FBI is, in fact, a criminal enterprise. I mean, it functions like a criminal enterprise. Kevin Zeese, go ahead.
So true. And, the fact that the Deputy Attorney General's wife, Bruce Orr's wife, worked for Fusion GPS and was developing this opposition research, and that was kept from the court, that is pretty damning. That is pretty damning. But, of course, what's really important, I think, in this section you read going forward is the point they make that after Steele was terminated, Rod Rosenstein stayed in touch with close contact with him. Once again, Rosenstein's the target for Trump. This is about obstruction of justice, and it's going to be about getting rid of Rosenstein and getting rid of Mueller. That's what this memo is really designed to accomplish. The issues that we're concerned with about FBI abuse, about the FISA court abuse, about intelligence gathering on individuals, that is bipartisan support. That's not going to be part of the narrative discussed between the Republicans and Democrats. What will be discussed is what happens to Rod Rosenstein, what happens to the Russiagate investigation. And this you can, as you go through this memo, you see his name coming up over and over because that's going to be used by Trump to get rid of Rosenstein.
I have to agree. I can't imagine that Rod Rosenstein survives another week in this administration. I think probably what he should be worried about is whether the Republicans are going to now demand that the Justice Department look at him for obstructing justice.
And then and then you're going to have the Democrats and a lot of the liberals rallying behind Rod Rosenstein, like they rallied behind James Comey, as if
these people are the guardians
of freedom and the guardians of democracy. And that would mean the so-called resistance to Trump under these circumstances would not just be irrelevant. It would be actually reactionary. I mean, it would be more reactionary than the reactionaries, because one, it's designed to enhance confrontation with Russia, but maybe even more importantly, it would be to allow the FBI to aggregate to itself even greater power. If the liberals in America are the ones who are saying the FBI, in fact, under these circumstances, is the champion or the guardian of, quote, our democracy, that's a blank check for the FBI to step it up against people all over the country. Dan Kovalla.
Yeah, well, I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, the so-called resistance in many ways has become reactionary for the reasons you say, not only because, again, they seem to now have this unquestioning faith in the FBI and the CIA, but also are pushing, it seems to me, or at least some elements of it, are pushing for more military confrontations around the world, particularly with Russia. And, this has just gone insane. The whole Russiagate scandal has just been, to me, so devastating for this country, and it could turn out for the rest of the world. And, again, it's a shame that people who otherwise have good politics are the ones that are seem to be pushing this.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.